This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome back to this episode of The After Show. Very, very positive in Australia at the moment. Obviously the MMP updates for our global audience is we are significantly reduced the amount of cases in our nation. So I think it was like the best day we got was like 5 new cases.
Lockie and I have we've stopped social distancing. We're now sitting only a meter apart from each other as we record.
Yeah, it's crazy. They're going to open up gyms soon, we think. So things will change over here, I think, very, very differently to how they're going to change in America and Europe. So obviously we'll keep you kind of up to date with all the changes that we're making and some changes that are happening with kind of how we think we'll, you know, operate the gyms in the future. But until we know 100% how we want to do that, we'll share kind of our thoughts on that. And most likely that's going to be more of a business conversation. But I think just in general, the whole audience will be interested with how this stuff's changing. So on the way here, I was on the way here this morning for our podcast with John Wellborn. And you know, I've been chatting to my brother because he's living in Auckland at the moment, and sometimes because he's got him and his roommate, they're obviously just two pro fighters, young, just like got ultimate guys pad. It's kind of like a frat house for professional athletes, and a lot of the time they're just playing music. And his music taste has improved significantly since he's moved over there. He was into a lot of rock and stuff. Nothing wrong with rock. I like rock music, but he's now diversified into more acquired tastes like EDM. And hip-hop, and he started playing some Avicii. Anyway, so it inspired me. I put some Avicii on this morning, but I put the YouTube video of Avicii at like a big concert, and I came there for the music, but I stayed for the feeling of and the viewing. I know you shouldn't watch YouTube videos while you drive, but...
Why not?
Oh, it presents a small distraction, but it made me realize how much I think I'll miss, in particular, music festivals and concerts this year if they don't plan on bringing them back. I mean, Australia might be different, to be honest, but I would imagine it's going to be hard for those sort of events to come back. I don't know. There's just something about those events in particular that are such an essential part of our culture, but also European culture. Like music festivals in Europe, they run year round. They're so big. They're so important in America as well. It's just like what a lot of people look forward to. A lot of people spend their money on. It's upsetting talking about it. Don't want to talk about it too much. But yeah, I just realized, like, I looked at that event and I go, I always look forward to those. They're so fun. But now it's like, you know, we live in a world where you can't do any of this stuff. So I don't know how quickly that's going to come back in particular. I don't know if anyone is in events or in festivals listening to this, but I'd be curious to get your thoughts on how quickly the music scene, because live music is the best form of music. There is no...
But also, like, it is the whole scene now because they don't make money off CDs.
Yeah.
So it's come back in a huge way.
Yeah. Because you stream to sell concert tickets, yes. Right? So that's...
In the past, I imagine they make most of their money off CD sales, like double platinum and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But now they tour.
Yeah. I mean, they do make money off streams, but it's not their main source of income. Unless, obviously, you're like that 1% of 1%. So, yeah, I don't know what's in store for the future of the music industry, but I can imagine that it's going to be... Yeah, it's going to be pretty damn important for them to bring back concerts in some way. I don't know, maybe they're smaller stadiums, maybe it's a higher ticket price, which I wouldn't be opposed to. I think that'd be good. But, you know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what they're going to choose to do.
It's been a reminder that, you know, often you think how good the internet is. Like, it's so amazing, you get the best music, very good quality in your pocket anytime you want. But it's still not nearly as good as the non-internet versions of most things that you consume through the internet.
Live music is the best form of music.
Yeah, it's better. And so is live sport. Yeah. It's still better than on your phone.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just something about being there with the people, right? They're all enjoying it for that purpose. So, yeah, I mean, it'd be really interesting. So, also part of this morning, you rocked up. You look very tired. How has your sleep been going?
So, the sleep has been going... it's been definitely a decrease.
Yeah.
I used to be one of the top on our Whoop leaderboard.
Yeah.
I used to be like top 20, pretty proud of myself, hitting like 7.5-8 hours a night. At my lowest point, I was 88 out of 89 people in our Whoop group recording sleep. But what it has done...
As in like the hours or the recovery score?
Hours.
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 What'd you get?
I didn't have the worst
recovery
score.
Wait, someone was worse than you?
Just one person was averaging like 2.5.
Maybe they also had a kid.
Yeah, I think everyone's got different. Maybe they're just up all night reading coronavirus news.
Mm.
But it allowed me to do one experiment that I've wanted to do for a long time, because we've had a couple of sleep experts on the show, and we have another one coming soon. What they always talk about is, if you have any issues falling asleep, the best thing you can do is like really constrict your sleep, and you get crazy tired, and then you stop lying in bed not being able to sleep. When you're tired enough, like, you just fall asleep.
Right, right.
I don't know if you remember this. We've had this a few times. They're like, hey, in like sleep training, what we'll do is we'll constrict you to like, hey, you only get 4 hours in bed a night. And then after a week, it's like...
Sleep training.
You fall asleep straight away. Right. People have insomnia.
Right.
And I was like, oh, that's a really cool idea, but I could never be bothered to try that. It's like, it's such an awful experiment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I've basically done this experiment involuntarily. And what I can say is that it works unbelievably well. If you have any trouble... You know, you're just like, hey, I have trouble falling asleep. Like, I'm in bed for 9 hours and I get like 4 hours sleep. If you just constrict how much time you sleep, I believe those troubles completely just evaporate. Like, I'll go to bed now and people say it's like a saying, like, you fall asleep before your head hits the pillow. You actually fall asleep before your head hits the pillow. Like, I can be doing anything. I can be like on my phone, like full lights, like doesn't matter what I'm doing. I'm like, okay, I'm going to sleep now. Close my eyes, I'm sleeping.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, you don't do this, but yeah, if I go out and I get home at 5 a.m., 6 a.m.,
yeah.
Then I purposely will only sleep a couple hours because I don't like to throw up my circadian rhythm too much. So I'll get up at like maybe like 10, 11 that same day. That night, I don't do this every weekend, but I'll do it, you know, a handful of times throughout the year. That night, when you're trying to hold on till bedtime of the night where you've had 2 or 3 hours sleep, you know, you're exhausted from being out all the night before, partying, whatever, and you're forcing yourself to stay awake, like, you can barely make it to dinner.
Yeah.
Like, you have dinner at 6 p.m. and then after that 6 p.m., that's 7 p.m., you can...
If your chair even has a slight decline, like, you can lean back, you know you're going to fall asleep.
Yeah, no, I'll watch TV and my head will just start snapping back because it's just so tight. Yeah, it's a real thing. A part of most of this insomnia stuff how we understand it from our experts is, a lot of it is just the environment, right? It's psychological. Yeah, it's not necessarily that you can't sleep. Like, your body doesn't need sleep. Everyone's need for sleep is roughly the same. It's that the psychological pattern that you've built into it stops you from sleeping well.
Yeah, exactly. And once you've messed it all up, seeing this, I do think it's a really good system to get it back. Is you just restrict yourself. Hey, I'm only going to spend 4 hours in bed. Pretty soon, you'll be sleeping every single second of that 4 hours. And then you build it up 4.5, 5 hours. But you tend to like keep the habit. You've learned how to fall asleep almost straight away.
Right.
Because that's even happened to me. Like, I had very small amount of time. Now, I've had a little bit more time some nights in bed. But I'm sleeping every second that's possible.
And is the hardest part that you have to operate a whole day without sleep? Or is it that it's just like unpredictable?
It's unpredictable. I think it depends how people go about it. I think some people leave it more, but I'm definitely trying to support my partner through it. Obviously, she has naps during the day, but she's got a breastfeed. I want to help her get as much sleep as possible.
Is she getting less sleep than you?
She gets less sleep at night.
Okay.
Yeah, because he's got a breastfeed.
In a 24-hour window, she's getting less sleep overall.
Yeah, she sleeps less at night, but she naps during the day, which probably brings it up. But I think it's never the same quality when you're sleeping at like 3 p.m., right?
Yeah.
Compared to the hours that you get at night. The hours you get at night definitely are worth more.
Sure, yeah.
And I just think she's working harder because breastfeeding is super draining. But yeah, I think the biggest struggle probably for new parents is the unpredictability. It's like, you know, normally you look at you like, I get up at this time, I'm just gonna like get to bed on time and get some sleep. Whereas you have no control.
Yeah.
Yeah, but okay, I'm like do everything in place, like get to bed on time, then it's like you realize like, it's not a good night and it's not happening. And nothing you can do about it. You already had your plans for the next day.
Yeah.
But for anyone that maybe isn't in that situation, I do think if you ever have trouble falling asleep in any of these situations, within 5 days of just severely restricting how much time you spend in bed, you will be falling asleep like a champion within a minute.
Yeah. And it's almost like that night of sleep that's really, really good and really solid almost restores your faith in your ability to get a good night's sleep. Because that's part of insomnia, exactly. Right?
You realize you can do it.
Yeah. Part of insomnia is you lose the belief that I can sleep well.
You've got in the habit. No, when I fall in bed, like I start thinking about all my to-do list.
I'm not a good sleeper.
When you only have 3 hours in bed, you don't think about your to-do list.
Totally.
You can't. You don't have the energy. You just are asleep.
Yeah, totally. No, and you know, one of the things I also started this week was, you know, we're getting James Smith back on the podcast. Obviously, it was the biggest podcast of 2019, and. Yeah, I was chatting to him a bit and then you know, I decided that, fuck, you know, it's probably a good idea to read his book. Obviously, it's became one of the... It's the Sunday Times bestseller in the UK, which is a pretty big achievement, I'd imagine. And yeah, I started reading that. And, you know, what I realized from his book, and I've kind of known this about a lot of our industry for a while, is if you just take the right, and this is kind of what we do, right? It's like you just take the small bits of information that are practical, that apply to the everyday person from books, from interviews, from clients that you work with, from observations, and you just lay it out in the most simple, easy to understand way possible. That is a great recipe for being popular and just you know, valuable for people. You know, and in turn, if you have the right product, you can get paid well. So he wrote a fantastic book. Anyone that hasn't listened to it, like now, when I'm listening to it, I'm getting something different from it versus when my mom listens to it, right? The person that he is targeting in that book, it's, for me, it seems quite obvious. It's, you know, a female somewhere between 25 and say 40, 45. That has always struggled with kind of fitness and health and her body weight her whole life, and kind of ties everything into it, relationships, and he helps break it down and make it really simple, the concepts around, you know, what the 80-20 around losing weight and getting in shape. And, you know, he ties other important stuff into it, habit building, your relationships, your stress, and, you know, obviously ties it together with, you know, him working with his clients, same way we kind of go over stuff on the podcast when we work with our clients. And then just, you know, his own experiences, and then a really good amount of evidence-based kind of science and practice. So we use all that stuff as well. And it's just, I think it's just a really good formula, because we just really struggle to filter through. Like, we have to filter all the fitness shit that's out there for the everyday person, because they're never going to do it. It's not their job. It's not important. They got, you know, 1 hour a day to work out and care about their health and fitness. And we need to make sure that whatever they're investing in that hour is, you know, a really, really important amount of stuff, or just the right things, to be honest.
Yeah, often I always hear people like, hey, why are we still talking about fat loss? Like, we already know how to lose fat. There's nothing more to discuss. But there is, because constantly you're having to re-educate or just educate new people on the topic, and times are changing. So you're always having to like redo how you explain it to everyone. You need like a new personality, yeah. Like, hey, this is how I'm getting across to like the new generation that's like spending, you know, their lifestyles have changed and this has changed. You've got to redo it and like come out with a new way to explain it. And obviously, he's done a really good job of finding a new way to explain it to a certain population.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. So, one of the things that I was explaining as well to my audience on Instagram, I don't usually do a lot of long-form content on Instagram, but I felt like, because I've been doing a bunch of research in this area, you know, as we shift into the post-lockdown era, obviously, we're thinking about gyms reopening, and a lot of damage has happened to the fitness industry in the interim. And I felt like, firstly, I wrote a 3-part email series on this. If you get the daily email from me, you would have read it by now. If you don't, it's in the link. The link, sorry, is in the description of this episode. But basically, what I went on to talk about was the death of the commercial fitness model, the commercial gym model. So I thought it probably deserves some airtime here. If you want a like even more in-depth understanding of it, you can just go on my Instagram. It's like a 10-minute video. But basically, I'll just tie it into a story. In 1970, Arnold Schwarzenegger burst onto the scene. And what did he make popular? What did he make mainstream for the first time? He made lifting weights a mainstream thing. You know, he looked absolutely incredible, and everyone wanted to be like Arnie. A lot of guys, and obviously the lifestyle that he was portraying there, you know, Venice Beach, California, sun, and creating gyms, like creating a Gold's Gym became, you know, an option, a commercial option for the industry. And so, you know, from that, gyms were born. Next thing that happens is, you know, obviously everyone's copying the Gold's Gym model. It's the first model. Okay, we're going to create these clubs where you can work out and you can lift weights. And, you know, our customer is this guy that comes along and he wants to be a bodybuilder and he wants to be like Arnie. And yeah, he sweats and he breaks equipment, but he wants heavy weights and it's all about the pump. They want lots of mirrors and et cetera, et cetera. And then obviously at some point, these businesses have looked at the model and they've gone, okay, well, interesting. We've got these, you know, these members that show up every day. You know, we charge them good money. They use the equipment. They get results. They kind of know what they're doing. And then there's this segment of the population that want to be that person. They want to show up. They want to be like Arnie. And we call them and we try and get them to come in, but they're not using their gym membership and they end up canceling. But what's interesting is, hey, they paid us for 6 months and they didn't show up. What if we created a model here? What if we had the idea to just build something and find a price point at which we could get more of these people? So the idea became, okay, through the 80s and 90s, what is the sweet spot which you can charge someone that they will commit for the most amount of time, but not show up. And that number ended up being somewhere between, in America, I think it's a lot lower than it is in Australia, but around here, it's somewhere between like $15 to $25 a week. And that became the perfect sweet spot where they could build a model for thousands and thousands of people, a facility for thousands of people, and reliably not have them show up, which meant that the people that do show up on a regular basis, like you, Raf, and like me, we could get amazing facilities, brand new equipment, cleaning every single day, showers, saunas, all this stuff for like 10, 15 bucks a week, because 95% of the customers don't show up and use the product and services, or show up and use it so infrequently that it drives the price down for everyone. Now, here's the problem is essentially what you've done is you've just created a business where you're trying to get people to not show up, use your service. And like, how unethical is that? Like what, how have we not been more outspoken about how bad of, like, that's just not good business, right? There's no accountability there. The reason fitness works is because of accountability. That's why people show up to our gyms, is because they know they have a coach, they have someone calling them, they have a PT. That's why all that stuff works. But as soon as you take that out, you don't want people to be accountable, because if they show up to your gym, they use the equipment, they use the facilities, they cost you money and your profitability goes down. So you have these companies, Planet Fitness being a huge one of them, they're specifically trying to get people to not show up. And some of the strategies they use to keep people that eventually get to that 6 month point and go, fuck, I paid for 6 months, it's not worth it, I'm going to cancel. They go, oh no, it's all right, we've got pizza night every week. And so you stay for pizza, which is stupid. You signed up for a gym. So what I think is happening is now this model is being collapsed, because this sleeping giant, which is, you know, the 80% of the membership base that pays all the bills, all the revenue, that hasn't shown up or showed up once or twice, you know, that couldn't be bothered to cancel because it's such a nominal amount of money for them, that's all done. It's all wiped off. They have to re-sign to join back up. All their debits have been canceled. So it's interesting, because now commercial fitness is left in this position where, firstly, lots of them are closing permanently. So we already know that's happening. But when gyms return, people are going to come, but the only people that are going to come back are the people that were showing up already, which is, Raf, you and me. But we're paying $30 a week, $25 a week. There's no way for, you know, say, you know, Fitness First has 10,000 members. If the regular 1,000 members show up, we have to be at the revenue levels, you know, because these places aren't that profitable. Most of them make, you know, 5 to 10% profit. We have to be at the revenue level of 10,000 people. And so what does that mean? For those 1,000 people, we're going to either have to charge you more, or we're going to have to downgrade our facilities or change things in a certain way. So it's been really good, because it's meant that bad business model, good for us, we've benefited off of it, but that essentially unethical business model now has been finally collapsed. So I don't know exactly what they're going to do. They have a very tough situation on their hands. I don't envy them at all. But I know quite a few of them have declared bankruptcy. So I think it's a much more necessary shakeup. What I hope happens, what my hope is that gyms now become, and this might rub people the wrong way a little bit, but gyms become more of a luxury. If you want to learn how to do things extremely well, if you want to get taught in person, if you want to have a high level of service, you have to pay for it. It's worth hundreds of dollars a week. And that's what people should be paying for. That's what it's valued at. But because of commercial fitness, it drove that price down for the consumer. And so now people think that I can get in shape for $10, $20, $30 a week. It's not true. For that price, you get access to rented and leased equipment. That's it. But you have to figure it out for yourself. So people like you and me, Raf, who did figure it out by ourselves, we're good. So we can use that. We can pay that price to use rented equipment. But for everyone else who wants to learn it and go through the skill of it, it's like anything else. You know, if you want to learn how to play Mozart's symphony, you can teach yourself. It's free on YouTube. Go figure it out. Learn piano. It's just a longer, harder, more difficult process that requires more discipline and more accountability. And you have to buy a lot of your own stuff. And that's kind of what people are doing. They're like, all right, cool. I'm figuring it out for myself. I'm getting a cheap online program and I'm buying some home gym equipment. But if you want the best teacher, if you want to learn it correctly, if you want to have the accountability of showing up for piano lessons every day, it's someone's time, it's an expert, it costs money, and that's what you're paying for. And that's what I hope gyms become. I hope all the commercial fitness kind of starts to shrink and becomes not really a viable option for a lot of people, and maybe only sort of specialized commercial fitnesses stay around, like popular bodybuilding gyms. But the micro gym survives, and you get good coaches and trainers that charge more, and that's what you have to pay for if you want that luxury. And if you want it cheaper, if you want that price point, hey, it's the online training school and it's home gym equipment. And that's just kind of how it's going to be. If you want to lose weight, cool, restrict calories and start walking. That's a good starting point.
Yeah, you know, what would be fascinating is if, so obviously health is extremely important. It's like your finances, right? Both of you are really important. And when you go to, it's like a financial plan, kind of like a gym for your finances, there's so much regulation around like, hey, people that work with us, you know, these are their average results. And these are their average results over like 5 years and 10 years. And here's like the top results and here's the bottom results. And they by law have to tell you all this stuff and give you the information. What would be incredible is that when you walk into a gym, your health is just as important. I would probably say more important than your finances. They should come out and be like, okay, cool. So you're joining up. It's 12 months. We do have to let you know, average member comes 6 times in their first 12 months of membership here. And you know, they get 0 results with us. There is like a 1% that does get results, and these results are possible. Look at all these people that are getting amazing results. But here's the 95% that never show up on the membership that you're about to purchase. Do you still want to go ahead and purchase it?
Mm-hmm.
And just be like honest about the situation. But it's a conversation they never tell you.
Oh.
You know, you have to like go digging around the internet, and usually no one can even really believe it when they find out. You know, this is information that they have and they withhold. And I think something so important like this, they should make all the gyms just like lay it bare on the table.
Mm.
And it's the good gyms that will actually tell you the average. Like at our gym, we'll actually tell you, hey, we get, you know, just over 70% of the membership in every single day. So yeah, if you join this, odds on, you're going to come 3-4 days a week. That's yeah, just like the facts of the situation.
Mm.
And I wish all gyms had to do that.
Yeah. And yeah, before we get into the listener questions this week, so one thing I was thinking about, you know, during this whole, I think this happened for you as well, Raph, is it's totally changed your perspective on like what kind of training you can do with how little equipment you can do it with. You know, before lockdown, I reckon I was using the most amount of equipment per session that I was ever using. And I was like integrating machines into my workout. I was doing like the pendulum squat. I was warming up with all kinds of like funky kettlebells and Y bells and all this, like the cable machine. It was great. I was using I was basically just choosing equipment that I really wanted to use and somehow integrating it into my program. But since then, I rewrote a lot of stuff and really rethought about, you know, how I can use simple training tools, how people can use simple training tools to get to their goals. And for a lot of people, and for me included, you know, goals are as simple as just getting stronger and staying in shape and building muscle and, you know, losing body fat and just feeling really good. And I thought, okay, what would be the most, like, what would be the smallest amount of equipment I could get by with? Because I saved a bunch of equipment at the gym left over, and slowly as more people wanted it, you know, we gave away 80% of the gym's equipment, but you know, we left 20% for ourselves and the coaches. But then more people were like, hey, can I get a little bit more of this, a little bit more of that? And I started thinking, oh, well, I want this, I want that. And then I started giving it away, of course. My members are more important. And I got down to basically a couple of sets of dumbbells and a barbell with some very limited weight. And that was pretty much it. And I thought, okay, what if I didn't have the barbell? Then what would I have? I made a good argument last week for dumbbells being like the best training tool you could have. And didn't really get debated. I think everyone's in agreement. And so I thought, okay, you know, we had these 8-week programs planned that we were going to build with all this equipment, and we still got them, which is now's not a good time to launch them. So instead we wrote a full strength and conditioning program. So a strength component, warm up, mobility, and then a conditioning piece as well, integrating just a set of dumbbells. So I worked with the coaches to build this 8-week program. And honestly, man, I'm really proud of it. I think that anyone that can do this program that has a set of medium, kind of moderate weight set of dumbbells, just, you know, once you have, look, put it this way, the more I kind of go on Instagram and see all these fitness people at the moment, the more I think there's no exercise out there right now that we don't know about. Like everyone, every person, like every girl, every guy, every gym, every brand, they're all posting good exercises you can do. So what is it that makes a program different? And what it is, it's how you put it all together is what matters. Because, okay, cool, a dumbbell thruster is a great exercise. Everyone knows about it. But how a dumbbell thruster integrates into a program, integrates into a conditioning workout, integrates into an 8-week program with rest and sets and volume and tempo, like that is where all the magic is. And that is where 99% of the industry have no fucking idea what to do. Because programming it all together, that is the difficult part. And I'm telling you, a lot of people have shithouse programs. Like their programs are just, they just throw random shit together. They just make shit up that seems cool. So I guess the program that we built was for people who actually want good programming with just a set of dumbbells. And that's what we designed. So we went through like every workout, every week, made sure we totaled up the volumes, like we integrated the right tempos. We considered like all the flaws in it, the pros and cons. And yeah, pretty pumped with what we've got. And I've already put a few people through it and they love it. It's obviously using our app as well. It's not our app, but we're using like a training app called Team Builder. So you can like log all your scores, all the exercise demonstrations are in there, all the videos of us doing it. So yeah, pumped with this program. If you guys are interested in a dumbbell only program for 8 weeks, super cheap, it's less than $10 a week. I think it's $7-$8 a week. That you can go to a link in the description of this episode right now, and you click there and you can yeah, you can jump on it, sign up into it.
Yeah, it's what I'll be doing. I mean, the thing I've realized is just time is very limited for me, and it's brought me back to just having really good training options at home is incredible.
Mm.
But also what I've learned is putting together random workouts does get old after a certain period of time.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
How long this COVID thing has gone on is what's taught me that. 2-3 weeks, I'm like, oh, whatever, I'll just make it up. Once you get into like, it's been over a month now, it's like, I should probably do something that has some structure to the previous few weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can spin your wheels for a while, but if you want to make progress, you need a proper program. Yeah, so I was pumped with how that turned out, and yeah, hopefully people get some really good results on it. Cool. So one thing that Whoop integrated, so this, if you guys aren't wearing the Whoop strap at the moment, then there's a few different layers to it, but essentially if you're hearing about it for the first time, the Whoop band, it's obviously, it's kind of like the, trackers are all the rage at the moment now that people are sitting at home, right? Whoop's definitely the most advanced training technology that's out there. I know there's been some comparisons that are pretty close, but Whoop, in terms of sports and recovery, I think Whoop is definitely the most accurate. But one of the things that's been interesting during the lockdown is my calorie burn and how that's dropped. So I tried to get some stats on the average, averaging it out, because my step count is way down. But even though the step count can go down, like you can have a 4,000, say you do 5,000 steps in a day, your calorie burn can still be way different from day to day. So I don't know if steps is always the best indicator. It's a good starting point. But my calorie burn has gone from 2,900 average down to a 2,600 average. So 300 calorie difference every day. So, I mean, 300 calories is not that much food. You can easily tip over the edge and put on some weight. I've been monitoring my weight, so it hasn't gone down. Sorry, it hasn't gone up. But yeah, having that sort of data, I think, just holds you so accountable to, you know, just making the right choices every day. Like seeing it, oh shit, my daily energy expenditure overall, obviously a large part of that would be made up of NEAT, has gone down 300 calories on average. Man, I'm having some pretty sedentary days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had a friend who's also doing some nutrition coaching and looking at it. And, you know, in the past, you always did step counts. But instead now he's like, oh, I got a Whoop. I'm obviously going to do like just the Whoop expenditure. It's way more accurate than step count on how much you've burnt in a day. And same thing. It's a huge change. It's like nearly 10% change.
Yeah.
For total calories. And sometimes you almost think, oh no, it's the same because I'm going on like an intentional walk every day that I didn't do before. But you just don't realize how much you just don't burn.
Yeah.
You are just at home.
Yeah. No, it's huge. And one thing as well is Whoop has just introduced, so Whoop had the diary where you could the journal. So you could integrate more questions, you know, did I meditate? Did I read a book in bed? Whatever, did I wear blue light blocking glasses? All this stuff. But now they integrated mental health. Do I feel like I had purpose today? It was like, did I feel motivated today? And then it's like, do I feel depressed or anxious? And I thought that was really interesting because, man, they're getting a lot of interesting data. I think it'd be very, very, like you might find, you know, you say you record this data for a month and it's like, cool. On these days where you drink alcohol, it shows us a direct correlation. You know, we've got the data to show you feel feelings of depression the next day, or like your recovery score drops by this much and you always say, I have no purpose or whatever. I'm not saying it's that extreme, but you can start tying those things together a lot more likely to make just like small changes. And those small changes are the things that add up. So I think they're doing a good job there.
Yeah, incredible. And it's Whoop, MMP is the code if you want to get a discount.
Whoop.com.
And I'll add one more anecdote to the tracking. I don't know if you saw this, but in Australia, we have a COVID-19 app, right?
Sorry, MMP15. MMP15, right. Yeah.
MMP15, you get 15% off. So we have a COVID-19 app. I think a lot of the world has got this app, right? I'm sure they've copied the app. And everyone's going crazy, like, oh, like, are you tracking our whereabouts? Like, what about the privacy, all this stuff? And I don't know if you saw, but so the Australian top health guy, it's like the Dr. Fauci in America, Australian version. He's up there and he's like, look, we're doing really good social distancing. Here's all the data on how much less people are driving around the streets. And here's all the data on how much less time people have spent waiting at bus stops and at train stations.
Mm.
Everyone's like, oh, but I thought you said you weren't tracking us, like, with the COVID-19. He's like, oh, no, we're not tracking you, don't worry. But Google and Apple are already tracking, and they already sent us all the data. And here it is on the screen.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is incredible example of how silly everyone is. Like, they're going so crazy over the government app, and what are you guys doing with it when it's actually saving our lives? But they don't care that the fact that companies have been tracking them for years and are handing it over to whoever really needs it.
Yeah. Have you got the app?
Of course.
Yeah, I got the app. Yeah. No, it's funny as well. Yeah, people were saying, oh, you know, don't get the app. You know, this whole government conspiracy thing. And that is exactly my first thought was...
You've lost it.
you gave up your privacy
you
with
have,
data...
You have Gmail.
Years ago. It's gone. They're tracking everything you're doing. This is... But then I heard the argument that it's like, well, it would be too much of a shock to then use this information in legal terms or whatever, or health terms, because, you know, we never gave the government permission. But they're like, well, now... You know, we gave them the app. So now with the data they already have, they can just use this app as like, oh, well, you gave us permission. So we're going to use all this data that we already had. I'm like, it doesn't matter. They're using it anyway.
Come on. And then after COVID-19, just delete the app.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just stupid. It's just stupid. Get the app. Get the app.
Please get the app.
Okay. So first listener question.
Yeah. We got some very, very
That was not an ad for the government app. They didn't pay us for that.
Okay. Great question to start off. So we have Kristen Carter. Sent it in from the emails. Hey guys, I'm a CrossFitter that is used to training 5 to 6 times a week pre-COVID gym shutdown. Having minimal equipment and changing up the way I train has changed my mind in terms of priorities and goals for training. I'm looking forward to trying new types of training once gyms open again. How did you transition away from CrossFit? What changes did you see in your body and mindset?
Yeah, it's a good question. I definitely think there's, you know, when I reflected on this question, when I took my amount of training down, firstly, it was a relief because we were training so much, but, you know, going from 2 a day to 1 a day and then going from, you know, 6-7 days a week to 3 or 4 days a week, there's definitely a, you know, base level of anxiety where you feel I am not as, you know, I'm not a beast anymore. You know, I'm not training hard anymore. I'm not as good as I used to be. I'm going to get fat or I'm going to get skinny or whatever, you know, insecurity you have about your body changing. And then I think you just have to live in that place for some time to overcome it, to just simply be okay with the fact that, hey, I've decided to change. I'm trying new things now. I'm taking a break from so much training, and let any changes that are going to happen and be okay with it. And at the end of the day, you know, as long as you are smart about your training, the less training you're doing, you're making sure it's still effective training and you're not... you know, eating excessive amounts of food, you know, some habits are hard to break out of. You know, I was eating a lot of ice cream during our CrossFit training because we're burning so much energy. But as long as you can identify some of those habits and reduce them, what you'll find is, you know, there aren't that many crazy physiological changes. Not like all of a sudden I just turned into a balloon animal. You know, I didn't, if anything, I gained a bit of muscle because I was burning so many calories. My body didn't have the resources left over to build more muscle tissue. So in that sense, it was a positive thing for me putting on weight. But definitely mentally it's tough. You know, you have to sit in a period of a bit of anxiety of like, oh, you know, I'm not a beast athlete anymore. I'm gonna have to take a step back here.
Yeah, I definitely agree with what you're saying. The mental aspect is probably the hardest. Your body isn't, if you keep training, your body's not going to change very much. Just look at all the people that did do CrossFit, still train, they look very similar to, you know, when they were doing CrossFit. Yeah. It's pretty obvious. So the mindset will be the most important. I think what can be a good option to do is just, you know, write down what training hard and succeeding to you is going to be if you're not competing. Because what will tend to happen is, even if you follow the program you set out to a T and you smashed it and you trained hard, you'll feel at home like in some way you've skipped something, like you've softed out because you were just used to doing more.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, you're like, I just have this feeling like I think I've been skipping some sessions or whatever, like because you're just used to double days. Or you'll find yourself doing two sessions a day for no reason because that's just like the habit that you've built in over a long period of time. You just don't feel good unless you've done it.
Yeah, you get anxiety around 3 p.m.
So just being like really clear, like, no, this is the amount of training I'm going to smash. And if I smash this and I bring the right intensity, I've trained hard, I haven't skipped sessions. Like I've fulfilled all the promises that I promised for myself. And I think if you can do that, you might have more success because you'll get rid of that underlying, like, am I being a pussy here? Am I softening out? Am I missing sessions? Because you're just in the habit of doing more and it's just a tough transition.
And I think it's also nice to be able to discover, which is what I discovered, that you can still get really good results training less often. And I think that always, you know, when you're training a lot, you feel good knowing the fact that, hey, I can't do any more here. You know, I'm really pushing myself to the max here and more is better. So once you kind of break that paradigm, you start to think to yourself, oh shit, well, okay, I can get stronger on 3 or 4 days a week. You know, I can still make progress on 3 to 4 days a week. And it's a nice feeling, you know, because now you're doing the minimum effective dose, you know, so, and that's a really important place to get to where you can do the absolute minimum and still get a really good training response, you know, versus throwing an extra 4 or 5 hours of training and a lot more intensity each week, but you only make a tiny bit more progress. You just got to weigh up if that's worth it.
And you'll probably save some money not going to the chiropractor.
Yeah.
All right. Next question.
That's guaranteed.
Zion Tiger. For someone who is studying Cert 3 and 4 in fitness, which is, if you're in the States, that's like, fitness certifications to get into the industry.
Yeah. What's it called? Is it the ASM or ASM or something in America?
I have no idea. It's like, I think NCAA have a test.
Yeah. Whatever the minimum certifications are to become a personal trainer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear tips and personal experience on like how to get started, different employment paths, importance of having a mentor, building brand name, any of those and more on getting started would be amazing.
Mm. Yeah. I think, look, in this lockdown right now, obviously, we've talked about this question a few times. It's a good question. In this lockdown now, my weighting towards online is skewed a little more heavily. I think that what most personal trainers don't consider when they get into the industry is that you are in most cases a business owner. You're like a micro business owner. You're running your own system. What I mean is you're going to have your clients. They're going to pay you directly. So you need some kind of system for that. Some kind of debiting system. You know, they can't just transfer your bank account all the time. You can't be taking just random bits of cash in envelopes every time. So you need a system for that. But also you need to do your own taxes. You know, you need to have revenue and, you know, you need to add up your expenses and you're running your own little mini business. And a part of that is you need to get good at marketing and sales. Now, you don't need to get too good at marketing because if you do work for a commercial gym, even though I just said they're dying, the marketing is done for you. Those clients are coming in. So really sales is more important. And sales is more important than marketing anyway. But marketing is way less important when you work for someone else as a contractor, as a PT. So I think that's probably a lot of PTs, they feel insecure about getting results for clients because you haven't got results for people yet. So you feel like obviously the most important way to get results is to become more knowledgeable at training. And that is important to a certain point. And then it becomes more valuable to become better at sales because sales is then retention. It's learning to be able to speak to your clients in a way that, you know, you're constantly reselling them on the reasons that they came to you in the first place. And that's important. If someone, you know, everyone's going to at some point want to quit. They're going to come up to you after 3 or 4 weeks and they're going to, you know, I'm putting on all this effort. I'm eating what you told me to do and I still haven't seen any results yet. And you're going to need to have a new sales conversation with them and be like, okay, why are you not getting results? What's the issue here? How can I be better? How can I provide more value for you? And then you just reset that sales process and then, you know, you lock them in again and you lock them in again. And that's just a constant thing as a PT. And I think a lot of PTs avoid it and they wonder why they're not successful. It's because, you don't want to take money from people. You don't want to challenge people on their beliefs and difficult things. And it's just a growth process you need to go through.
Yeah, I love the, we've talked about it before, but John Berardi's book, he has a book on, you know, how to basically
change
succeed.
Maker.
Yeah, change maker, succeed in the fitness industry. And he has, at the very end of the book, so if you get to the end, he has like how to build your own kind of education format, like your own little university for becoming a trainer or really in the fitness industry. He has a cool way of doing it. It's like if you can visualize it, it's like a T. So on that horizontal bar of the T, you want to go like learn a little bit about all sorts of different topics. That'd be like sales, you definitely need that, definitely need some marketing. You'll definitely need like sleep. You'll nutrition. Need like stress management. Yeah, you'll need food intolerance. Like you'll need a whole bunch of stuff, right? For if you want to be training, like so many problems that people will come to
sure,
you with.
Yeah,
and even in some accounting stuff. And then you'll have the vertical stick of the T, which is the topic you want to go like super deep on. So maybe for this trainer, it might be, you know, getting strong, body composition change, athletic performance, something like that. So there's like one topic you can become like a real expert in, like really learn deep dive. It's probably the thing you're really passionate about, so it's going to be easy. But you need to make sure you're taking care of that horizontal bar as well, which is not taken care of at Cert 3 and 4, which is like all the other topics you need some shallow knowledge of to succeed. And usually when you see the best trainers, obviously they have tons of experience, which they started getting as early as possible. And then they have that like really well-built tea of knowledge that they've got over years.
Yeah. And the only thing I'd add to that as well is I think Changemaker is a great place for anyone to start because what I think it does really well is it identifies your strengths and it helps you align them with the type of person you want to train. I think that's really important. A lot of PTs, they just think any work is good work, but bad clients burn you out of the fitness industry.
That's for sure.
If you happen to get lucky and work, you know, the first 20 clients you worked with were the clients that you just gelled with perfectly and they were the people you always wanted to work with, then you wouldn't burn out. You'd be excited to go and help these people and go to work. And that's just a discovery process we had to find. And now we're at a point where we've, you know, having worked with thousands of clients across all the gyms, we've now isolated a particular subset of client and go, this is the person we want to serve more. This is the only person we want in that gym. And when someone shows up and they're not like that, we don't want to work with them because that's just not exciting for us. That's just not what we want to do. So we've chosen to help this particular type of person. And I think that's extremely valuable for personal trainers as well. And I think you're going to know it 100% at the start because you haven't worked with all these people. You might go, there's no way I want to train people like my mom on how to like get in and out of chairs and, you know, fix their arthritis in their knee or whatever. But, you know, after training them, you might decide, hey, they're actually my favorite clients. I love working with them. Like Sal on Mind Pump's pretty famous for saying like his favorite clients he liked to work with were people in their 80s, 70s and 80s. He's like, you know why? Because they had the best stories, the funniest stories, and they had 100% compliance. They had nothing else to do in the day except show up and come to the gym. And so you'd be surprised what you find. So yeah, in the beginning, it's good to work with a lot of people, but very quickly, I think you need to decide of all these people I'm working with, who do I want to keep targeting more? And then it makes it easy for you because then you can become a specialist. Like, hey, you know, I'm the PT that works with like, you know, rehab patients in their 70s.
Yeah.
You know, makes a big difference.
And you'll be able to track them. Yeah, very good book. I strongly recommend. Scondicetti asks, how to eat body weight in protein without going over calorie count? How to achieve that sweet spot?
Body weight in protein. So just like the protein for your body weight.
Yeah, I'm assuming they're probably saying, you know, pounds probably. So
yeah,
probably saying, hey, I weigh 80 kilos. So they'd be trying to eat, you know, 2.2 times that. So they're pounds in body weight, which is going to be around like 175 grams of protein for 80 kilo person.
Yeah. It's, okay. So without going over your calories, well, it's a pretty simple answer, right? It's just, you got to reduce calories in other areas. Protein is the most important. So yeah, you hit that first. You're absolutely right there. Nail that macronutrient and then obviously just see where you're spilling over. It could be potentially that all your protein sources aren't lean enough. That's an easy way to just change things is, you know, instead of eating steaks or whatever, you can go and chicken thighs, you can go more towards like leaner cuts of red meat, or you can go to fish, you know, rather than going from salmons and tunas, you can go to like white fish that are leaner. So you can make some choices there and that should bring you under. It just also depends how far over you're going as well. You know, you could cut back on some snacks there. You could cut back on some extra supplements you might be taking. But yeah, it's hit that protein target and then work everything else around that.
Yeah, one strategy, I mean, this is definitely not compulsory, but one thing I've generally like to do is in the earlier part of the day, stick much more towards getting ahead on protein and being a bit behind on carbs and fat. And that just leaves... Well, for me, it's just left more wiggle room to mess things up and to fix it up at the end of the day. You know, if you like eat not very much protein for breakfast, not very much protein for lunch, you're getting towards the end of the day and the only thing you can eat, still make your day work, is protein. And it's really hard to select a good dinner. And then if you get invited out for friends, it's like horrific day.
Yeah, it's out the window. Yeah, it's tough, yeah.
Whereas obviously there's no like magical thing that happens in your body by changing the time of day that you eat it. But I've just personally found if you stick to more like, yeah, leaner cuts of meat, high protein, lower fat, lower carbohydrates in the first half of the day, there's just more wiggle room at night. And then you can have, like, if you're eating at home and you nail it, cool, eat it, eat whatever composition of dinner that makes it work. But if you do get invited out, usually when you get invited out and you eat out, it's a lower protein meal and it's a higher carbon fat meal, it's still more likely to work within the parameters of your diet.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, Kyle Andrews, in the first 2 to 3 years of lifting, should you stick to a constant surplus if you're lean to start?
Yeah, I think that's going to be, well, I mean, it's going to depend on the goals, right? So, if it's like me and you wanted to put on as much muscle as possible.
Probably if they're lean, I'm guessing they want to build muscle.
Yeah. I think the hardest part with, okay, so with whatever body type you're starting the gym at, you know, there's always like, for some people, something they can point to that's like their thing, or something there's some positive attribute or trait, whether it's a performance thing or whether it's a body part that you feel like is your strength. And for skinny guys, it's abs. Skinny guys have abs. And so they're like, you know, they might have tiny fucking legs. People make fun of their legs. You know, they might have tiny shoulders and arms, but at least they can pull the front of their shirt up and show a full six pack, right? The hardest part about being a skinny guy is you have to give up the number one thing that you always had in order to fix the other areas that you're unhappy with, right? Which is, you know, gaining muscle. And it doesn't mean that you become fat. I mean, I don't think that's a good thing. And I don't think accumulating a lot of body fat under any circumstances is good. So part of this whole process to stay lean is a slower process. So people try and get into a 5, 6, 700 calorie surplus. It's just not necessary. You just need to be in a 200 to 300 calorie surplus is what the research shows to gain muscle. Anything else over that, you put yourself in jeopardy of gaining too much unnecessary body fat. So what I would just encourage is you don't have to go like this crazy bulk mode. It's just, first of all, it's unsustainable. It's not that fun. You know, it seems fun at first to like drink milkshakes and stuff at night and, you know, have all this excess fat in your diet and cookies and stuff. But at the end of the day, you don't feel great when you're doing it.
No,
you know?
It's not good for you.
Yeah. So I would just find a way to be in a small surplus, which is like adding, you know, one decent sized snack or one small meal every single day, and then just keep constantly doing resistance training. And on top of that as well, you've got to manage the rest of your calorie burn. So I think the problem with a lot of guys that try and gain weight is they just keep up all the extra activity in their life. So they might play sport, they might do all this other stuff, like they might have a really demanding job, and maybe some of that stuff you don't want to give up, but if there's room to give it up, you can, and it will make a difference. It might also mean that you don't have to eat as much to offset it. So you can step a little bit less. You can, you know, maybe cut back on the amount of sport that you're doing. And then your calories burned will go down. So you'll just find that small, you know, reduce some of the calories out, bump up the calories in, and then right there, you've got the perfect equation, and just be consistent with that, and you'll be able to stay lean and, you know, put on muscle.
Yeah, and you know, usually for guys and girls, if you're naturally a skinny type and you're in your first few years of lifting, doing like cuts because other people do it is generally unnecessary. Like you can maintain.
Yeah, I've only done one ever.
Yeah,
I've seen 12, this 13 a years times. Of lifting.
I've had good friends with this as well. It's like if you're naturally lean, it's always going to be easier for you to get lean again at any time in your life because that's just the way genetically you're set up. And if you don't have like, I always did think it was very silly when you don't have very much muscle at all, like you're in your first few years, you're like, oh, now it's time for me to cut to make sure I don't get too much fat.
Yeah.
It's like, no. You have so little muscle. Just keep going. Like yeah. For a lot of thin, skinny people, you might go the first 5, 6 years just always trying to maintain a slight calorie surplus and you'll go really, really well.
Yeah, that's what I did.
Yeah, and you know, you get fantastic results. There's no reason to like halt the progress, start going on some diet because you've like lost 2 of your 6 abs. Like I think just in the long term, you probably want to get big and strong.
Yeah,
and I just keep marching towards that long-term goal.
You know what I'd say as well is like, I've thought about this a lot. When, like, I think a lot of guys make the assumption, and you know, it's on a spectrum, right? A lot of guys will make the assumption that hey, if I look a certain way, girls will like me more, right? And there's definitely, you know, it varies widely in what girls like in terms of body, or what guys' bodies need to look like. But universally, you know, generally girls, you know, like have bigger arms and a chest and some shoulders, right? And just kind of generally just be in proportion.
Yeah.
Now, I think the guys, they take it so far to the extreme that they, and obviously Instagram fucks with guys' heads, is that they need to be this insanely lean version that's full of muscle, right? Not only a lot of people on steroids that do that, but they think they need to be jacked, but also super lean. And what I mean by super lean is not just a visible six pack, but like the lower abs showing, an 8-pack, full obliques, like veins in the abs, you know, back completely shredded. And until they reach that level, they're not going to feel like girls will like them. Most girls are actually repulsed by that, unless they're in the bodybuilding fitness community. The most, you know, the average girl, she, like when you get that lean, that's too much. That's a worse effect. So why do guys go to that level? It's because they're trying to impress other guys, because guys are verbal about that being awesome, where girls aren't. But guys will make the assumption that girls also feel that way, but it's not true. all guys stand around and they look at the abs and they share the photos with them. They froth with each other. So guys will make the assumption, oh, cool, if I want to attract girls, I've got to be shredded like that guy. It's not true. Mm. Most girls would prefer a guy to have a little bit more body fat, you know, to maybe just have, you know, just a, you might not even need a six pack, right? Some girls just like a guy that just looks thick, you know, or whatever. And guys never do that because they never ask girls, right? Because they're too scared. But most girls, will, you know, they'll find before the body type, they'll say confidence is more important. And I think that guys will just get so wrapped up and so obsessed in that little area that they all get so intense about being this crazy lean person when the only person that cares is another guy in the gym. That's the only guy that's really going to be impressed by that. And yeah, it's a lot of sacrifice in your life for not a lot of return.
Mm. It is definitely a low ROI. last question, Jackson Furley. Hey fellas, your suggestion on how to transition from a decent paying full-time job into personal training.
Yeah, well, I mean, we just answered all the stuff in personal training. So there's obviously a lot of learning to be done. But, you know, the question is always why? You know, what is it? Are you unhappy in your current job? Is that why you want to move to personal training? Are you just very passionate about helping people? Someone like you, I reckon reading Changemaker is a great book. Mm. A really, really good book to start with. But yeah, I think that if you get those feelings sometimes, it could just be because the actual job that you're in, you're not happy with. And maybe it's not necessarily the transition into personal training just because you like it. Because if you turn your hobby into your work, or if you turn your passion, your side passion into your work, it can very quickly not become something that you enjoy.
Yeah, well, most people that start personal training are out of it within a few years. So, yeah. You know, the rates are low of people that seem to really enjoy it and do it for a very long period of time. So, you know, I think that probably would be smarter if you could do it on the side, like one day a week or in your evenings or in your mornings.
Get a taste of it, yeah.
To see if like you actually really enjoy, you know, waking up early, helping clients that won't do what you say and like trying to get through those hurdles. Because if you look at the stats, most people don't find it a career they want to do for the long period of time. So probably tasting it before you just like quit everything and try and go for it is probably going to be a smarter option.
Yeah. And I mean, the job you have now, I assume some form of it will always be there when you go. So to go all in on personal training and have it not work out and be okay with moving back, I mean, that's also fine as well. Like, you can give it a shot for a bit. Obviously, people have bills to pay and, you know, mouths to feed and stuff like that. So, you know, sometimes it doesn't always make sense. But remember as well, like, the life of PTs that you see on Instagram is very, very different to the reality of what's really going on. And, you know, of all the people that we met that are making really good money doing personal training, you know, it's the same as any industry. It's the 1% of the 1%. But obviously the average in personal training is a lot lower. So you have to be okay with not, you know, earning a lot of money. And, you know, we've got friends that have made the transition in and out. You know, they've been a lawyer and they've made plenty of money, and then they've gone and they've worked multiple jobs as personal trainers and group instructors or whatever. And, you know, it was good and it was fun for a bit and it kind of scratched that itch, but it didn't pay the bills, you know, and it wasn't a good return. It's not to say it can't be, but that, you know, it's like any career, you have to really excel at what you're doing. You have to be all in to kind of really reach those 1%. It's not a job you can dip into, make a lot of money and dip out of. It's a long journey. So, you know, you got to be ready for that commitment, and yeah, you can always definitely give it a shot. Mm. Yeah. All right, cool. So before we progress into our Netflix reviews, we had a huge month of people buying blue light blockers, massive month. I think that the extended screen time, people were starting to notice symptoms like tired eyes, blurriness, you know, that feeling like you get kind of not a full-on headache, but kind of just tiredness and just general fatigue, and thinking to yourself, I don't get it. I've done nothing all day. Why does it feel like I'm all fuzzy or I've got brain fog? And if you listen to our episode with Andy, you realize it's because you've been way too overexposed to artificial light and has some really serious damaging effects on health. And that's essentially how we got to the sponsorship with Blue Blocks. Is I was having issues in front of the screen, spending so much time in front of the screens. This is pre-lockdown as well, to the point that I was already looking into blue light blockers, and then I was telling you about it, and then you found this company. And the reason we ended up going with them was because their lenses are actually laboratory certified. They're tested with all kinds of crazy expensive machines to actually block the light that they say they're going to block, where most lenses don't. So yeah, picked up the orange glasses for nighttime. And then the most important one, I think, at the moment is the daytime one. That clear lens that can put it on in front of a screen, safely sit down for hours and not get tired eyes. Game changer.
Mm. I'm a bigger fan of the nighttime ones. I'm spending a lot of time at night at the moment. Makes it...
Awake.
Yeah, awake. It makes a crazy difference in terms of being able to fall asleep, get back on your phone, fall back to sleep, blocking out the blue light. And you just need something comfortable that actually works in the night to really get the results. Because I've been using blue light blocking glasses for 7+ years.
Yeah.
But I've been using cheap, shitty ones up until now.
Yeah. And it makes a huge difference. The amount of people that had those kind of old school UVX, like factory worker glasses and moved to, you know, a more advanced, higher end product like Blue Blocks, night and day difference. So if you guys are interested, head over to blueblocks.com. That's BLUBLOX.com. Use our code MMP and you'll get 15% off. All right. We've got two different, well, you got a documentary and I got a show, but you can start with yours.
Okay. So this is, it's short. I think they're going to do a whole series on it. But they have started explaining coronavirus. I'd say it's probably the first thing of many things on coronavirus to hit Netflix. But it's obviously difficult because you can't really film anything because everyone's in lockdown. But they what they've done with this one is, I guess, they've taken a lot of the footage from the pandemic series that they've already done, that we have already reviewed on the show, and they've kind of updated it with a lot of the coronavirus stuff. It's short. I'm not exactly sure where they're going to take the whole series and how they're going to make it useful, but... I still reckon they did quite a good job on it. There was a bunch of stuff that I've, you know, watched the news and read articles on it that I didn't know about it. And I think just being pretty well informed on it is valuable, because you hear so much just either misinformation or just like random opinions and all this different stuff. And if you have some maybe like just more basic understanding of what it is and how it started, it's a bit easier to filter through stuff and be like, oh, that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Or like, you know, we don't actually know that. So I don't know how you would already make that claim. So
yeah.
I enjoyed it from that perspective, but what is also clear watching it is that they're not bringing out a lot of new stuff here. They're recycling a lot of old footage that was already used on a previous documentary and
in their series, in the Explained series.
Yeah, exactly. In the series they've already done, because they're not filming much stuff. You know, it's mostly just like graphics they've put together and some Zoom interviews, but I still think it's worth being informed watching it.
Yeah. No, it's a good series. And then I've been watching on Amazon Prime. Obviously, Amazon have finally taken my monthly Prime subscription from me. I used it to watch that last documentary, Islam and the Future Tolerance, and then ended up looking at some more series that they have on Amazon. And they have this series called Upload. Some of you, I think, did we review Westworld?
No.
Okay.
No.
So, Westworld is like a, I think it's an HBO series. Do you know about it?
My partner watched
it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, anyway. So, Westworld didn't get me. I don't know. Everyone fucking loves it. I just didn't like it.
Yeah.
So I got through a season and like a little bit into the second season. And honestly, it just wasn't for me. It was just, I just thought it was shit, to be honest. And then, my favorite genre is sci-fi. Love sci-fi. And like these concepts around AI in the future, like we love Black Mirror. But I wanted something, because I think Westworld tried to be a kind of a Black Mirror, but didn't really pull it off. It's so far-fetched that it's just fantasy.
Yeah.
Like, it's too far-fetched for me. It doesn't feel realistic at all whatsoever. There's the moral issues they're trying to deal with and integrate into the show. I don't think they've done well at all. And they just got a lot of fancy costumes and a lot of money. But the writing, I think, is terrible. But what I think is good in Upload is Upload's a lot more lighthearted. It's almost like a really lighthearted version of Black Mirror, but still in a way that makes you go, oh, that's really interesting. That's really close to what's happening now. And so they're kind of dabbling in some of the ideas, because it's set in like 2033. So it's not so far out that it's just outrageous, but there's some cool tweaks that they've made to everyday life. And I think those are the best ones, right? They're not such extreme examples, but just like how you use your phone, right? Or just like, oh, how you talk to your Fitbit, or like how the internet works, or like, you know, how cars work. Just stuff like that that makes it really good. And I really enjoyed it. I think it was a really good concept. So it's about, essentially, without kind of ruining everything, basically it's just in the future, you can now take what we're not far from, which is uploading your consciousness, and they put it into a digital world. So into like a VR world, which the living people that are still alive, can interact with. So before you die, Raf, you would go and upload your consciousness into this digital world. And then if I still wanted to hang out with you and talk to you, I'd put on VR goggles, and we'd like call each other, and you know, I would just interact with you in the digital world. But it's still you. It's still your consciousness. And it's just really funny, because it's like, you know, it's this big company, and you know, you got to pay for data, and you can get cheaper plans, and so you get less upgrades. And yeah, it's just really cool. So I really enjoyed it. They've only done one season, but you know, if I paid for Prime and I was getting shows like this, I'd be very happy. So That's what I'm doing. So I would check it out, Upload. I watched the entire first season. It's pretty short. It's only like 25-minute episodes, 10 episodes. Yeah, I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. Yeah, it was really entertaining.
Yeah, I think if you were to look at the genres, comedy and sci-fi have got to be the most important genres for us. Because comedy is good. I think everyone needs to laugh and to have fun. But sci-fi is unique in the fact that, yeah, like it's pretty good at like predicting the stuff that's going to come. You know, most stuff that happens, you can like go back and say, oh, well, listen, this sci-fi film, obviously like most stuff doesn't come true, but a lot of most technological advancements and stuff, like you go back and be like, oh yeah, it was like pretty similar to this movie and this series. Like it really does predict incredibly creative people and probably, you know, similarly smart creative people that are building the technology. So it's such a good genre.
Yeah, I just like it, yeah, because they have to be creative in sci-fi. Like, you have to...
But they get it right.
Yeah.
You know, it's just... Obviously, they just mostly don't get it right. But if you look back, you can almost always be like, yeah, like, you know, this thing with electric cars is like, this whole series was pretty close to that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, so check it out. Upload on Amazon Prime. All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. Remember, the dumbbell program is now available. The link is going to be in the description of this episode, so you can check it out there. Or you can head over to our website. We split it into a male and female version, so slightly different exercises, slightly different progressions. But you can head over to the website, themindmuscleproject.com, and you can find the dumbbell program on there as well. But yeah, I will link it up in the description of this episode. It's also linked up on our Instagram as well. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in, and I will speak to you all next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the Mind Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, The Mind Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themindmuscleproject.com/The After Show. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.